What kind of a file do I have? Well, after I started working on political assassinations and worked with what I call the hard evidence like ballistics or handprints, gun ownership, bullet direction, rifle capability, I knew something was wrong with the handling of the evidence and with the final conclusions of the Warren report that didn't match the exact finding of the ballistics. So I began certain files like CIA or FBI or ballistics, and I have, I think I've told you, hundreds of categories of information that I keep. But when you get to a subject like FBI, that covers so much that that isn't a file in itself. What do you want to say about the FBI? The way the FBI handles ballistic evidence, the way the FBI tells you a conclusion that isn't based upon actual fact. So I have the following, I have 11 envelopes, manila envelopes, with information or facts on the FBI, and these are the general categories, and then you'll know where how my head works. One is policies in general. What is their general principle? When they have a graduation, for example, who do they ask to speak? When they want to be recognized or they get medals, what are they given medals for? Where is their head at? Who supports them? Like Mr. Rosenstiel of Schenley Whiskey, he builds a monument to J. Edgar Hoover. He's a way back from the bootleg days. I used to go to the same summer resort with Mr. Rosenstiel for years up in Odin, Michigan. But Schenley Whiskey is the group that's building the biggest monument to J. Edgar Hoover. That's one of his closest pals. But I have a envelope called FBI Policies in General. Then I have another one called Friends, Sympathetic to the Agency. When somebody speaks up and defends them or speaks for them, who goes to speak for them? Who are their friends? Then I have one on the political structure. What is their political structure? Where is their head? They're an investigative agency, but are they far right? Are they far left? What do they mouth about communism or fascism? Do they come down on the Nazis or do they entertain them? They come down on the communists, we know. But where are they politically? How far one way or the other? I keep a information thing on the boss, Mr. Hoover, who his roommate is, who his friends are. There's nothing there about any dates or anything like that, but contacts or finances, donations, who as a person is giving him money, you know, and so forth. Then I have one on his enemies. Who criticizes him? What do they say? Like Bill Turner, who's written a book on the FBI. He used to be an agent, and he's written a book on J. Edgar Hoover. Fred Cook, who wrote a book, The FBI Nobody Knows, who just recently wrote an article for Nation Magazine on the Committee to Investigate Assassinations and Political Assassinations. That's his specialty. He used to be an FBI man. His specialty now is political assassination. Then I, just recently in my research, about 2 years ago, got turned on to the strong relationship of J. Edgar Hoover with the mafia, which I wasn't aware of at all until people from Texas brought me so many things. So when you read in the newspaper, Jack Anderson, about debts that Hoover owes Murchison down at Del Mar Racetrack, or he accepts their hospitality and goes to the racetrack, I wasn't aware that this is J. Edgar Hoover's only hobby, is horses. And that people up in Canada and the syndicate, I never realized until 2 years ago how deeply involved he was with the mafia. So when Howard Hughes came out and the disclosure that the gaming tables in Vegas are run by Robert Mayhew, who was a formerly FBI who runs the mafia, that's where all the skimming money and mafia money comes from, I didn't know until just about 2 years ago the connection of J. Edgar Hoover with the mafia. So then I had to start a new section called, you know, Hoover, the racetrack people. Then I could see why the intense hatred of Bobby Kennedy, because when he wanted to come down on the mafia, you know, then it was a different story. Or when you get Valachi, who was one of the mafia men, and he's taken to a jail in Washington and given protection and put in a penthouse, and he can only tell a certain amount. He didn't really stop the strength of the mafia from working, and nothing great happened, but Valachi had protection. When Jack Ruby wanted to go to Washington and be protected, J. Edgar Hoover wouldn't let him. And Ruby told Earl Warren, but I'll be dead. You won't ever hear what happened. You won't see me again. And this was right in July, right after the assassination. Following year, Ruby was dead, and they didn't see him. He couldn't have the protection that a mafia man had who wanted to talk. So I keep a file on J. Edgar Hoover on the mafia, and I keep one on FBI killings, because this is an area that is horrendous. And this is an area that I am crusading for. I have a lot of things going to work, if changes to affect Gloria in our society. And one is that the investigative agencies, the FBI, is set up to find out who robs the bank, who kidnaps your child, who kidnaps your husband or wife. Federal crimes across the line, they are not supposed to kill. The CIA is to gather intelligence, and these two agencies kill constantly. There's trial going down in Arizona about the FBI using an ex-Marine to do a killing and make it look like the mafia did it. Or when Columba was shot in New York just a while ago, he's still in a coma, he didn't die. His son said, the FBI and the CIA killed my father, the same people that killed John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. Everybody is on to these agencies. And we're going to talk in a few minutes about a new committee to investigate J. Edgar Hoover. Victims of J. Edgar Hoover have formed a committee. So I have a list of killings and that I have saved that would be valuable to this committee. The families know who are the victims, but I watch them too, because this agency, every agency in the United States, simply has to stop killing and do what it is set up to do, or its bosses should be removed from office and tried for these murders. And that day will come in our nation. It has to come. We have evidence. I keep a section on the FBI-CIA killings, and then I keep another section on the FBI-CIA mafia murders, where the three work together. A man named Mr. Roselli was arrested in Los Angeles at the Friars Club for gambling indiscretions in Beverly Hills. Grant Cooper was attorney for him and asked that he be given a lower sentence because he was a mafia man, for sure, but he was hired by Robert Mayhew in Las Vegas and the CIA 6 times, and he was sent to Cuba trying to kill Castro, and he couldn't do it. But because he's an agent of the FBI and CIA, the mafia suspect wants a shorter sentence. Unheard of. And then I keep a section on agent provocateurs, FBI people, informers in disguise, radicals, hippies, Tommy the Traveler, and that kind of thing. So I keep a file on J. Edgar Hoover, just like he keeps a file on me, I'm sure. Now, what happened to J. Edgar Hoover? What is Time magazine saying? It said that this is a quote, under J. Edgar Hoover's dictatorial 7-year rule, the Federal Bureau of Investigation has in the past been regarded, 47-year rule, yeah. He has been regarded as one of the finest law enforcement agencies in the world. Yet, now the 76-year-old director's fiefdom shows evidence of crumbling. The FBI's spirit is sapped. Its morale is low. Its initiative is stifled. And there are doubts about the FBI's ability to serve as an effective agency against subversion. End quote. This is what I thought would happen, that Hughes would come in, then slip out, and in 4 years, they would break down the whole tone of the FBI. I know that there are people in government who listen to these tapes, and they go to Washington, and Evel Younger's office listens. He's an FBI man, our attorney general of the state. The FBI has done wonderful jobs. It's done good jobs. It has done some terrible things. It is a balance in between. But now, Mr. Hoover is going to feel the pinch of what a real police state is, because I'm not defending J. Edgar Hoover, but what I feel now is that he is being cut off and strangled from the large body of a new power force. The article blames J. Edgar Hoover for going out in all directions and irritation with an agent who is in Colorado, and it claims now that J. Edgar Hoover is cut off from the CIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, and contact with other intelligence units. That's a quotation from Time. One more of May Bressel's predictions, right on the line, this would happen to the FBI. I said this would happen, and now it is going. J. Edgar Hoover is going to get the same treatment he gave Bobby or John Kennedy or Martin Luther King. They may not kill him, but they're discrediting him, and he is cut off from all the intelligence gathering in the country. Now, the quotation in Time, I'm reading once more again, said, a tangle of political ironies surrounds the director's present relation with the Nixon administration. The president and the attorney general, John Mitchell, have been hoping for months to ease Hoover out with great ceremony, public thanks for his long, remarkable career. Now, my analysis of the situation is this. We'll end that quote. That Hoover is an old guard conservative, like We could name a thousand of them. He made many mistakes in his judgment. He has that 19th century mind we talked about and all its paranoia. He has no family. He's close to his mother. He's hung up on sexuality. He's repressed. He transferred all of these frustrations, like 99% of the traditional church of the past, into God. God traveled with him and mommy. And Hoover is a product of our past. And just like the Pope and the priests and the nuns, the old Catholic Church, God went with them. And the problem with communism, the Tsar being thrown out, that was bad. We've had other things happen. When this communist threat came, that scary economic threat to divide all what I call the goodies of the world, that was pretty bad. You know, to take the oil and land and the farms and minerals and say everyone's going to have a share, that would scare Jake pretty much. But he's not a landed gentry, so it didn't scare him. But when you say God's going out there, that was too much for Jake. And he got so hung up on this godless communism and his anti-communist thing that he went gung-ho after those anti-communists all his life. So at the dockyards in New York and at Marseille and all over the world, he hired the mafia to find the communists. Because he wasn't afraid of the mob. He wasn't afraid of anybody like a communist. A communist, if you took his God, you took away from him everything that existed. And I'm not putting down the place of religion. For those who are wondering, I am a religious person. Believe it or not, I really am. But he was too extreme in his fears. He had not very much to hold on to if you read the story of his life and what was going for J. Edgar Hoover. And many people like him. They are the ones, if you look around, who screams the most about the communists. And they hold on to that church, and they hold on to that God, and their kids have left, and they're left with nothing else, and their world is crumbling so fast. We haven't got time to write their obituaries, so we'll just give a quick moment. So J. Edgar Hoover, he had his racetracks, and he had his horses and the syndicate, and it goes from California to Canada. And this was his recreation. This was his lifetime. This was his whole thing. And he made errors. Like Allen Dulles and John Foster Dulles, they made errors. They wanted to move the world. They couldn't. These old men made our foreign policy with China. If you open your paper this morning, the nations overruled the United States. They're not beholden to our money anymore. We're all going to trade. We're all going to get along. We don't have to be afraid of each other. And the yellows are going to make it, and the blacks are going to make it, and there's room for the whites. And everyone's going to have little ships and airplanes going back, and they're going to trade their clothes and all the things the world makes. I read in the fashion section yesterday of the Chronicle that the new thing, now that China's going to Nixon, is the Chinese clothes. Women, you know, the new fashion in the spring is going to be your Chinese clothes. And the San Francisco stores are getting the peasant shirts and the pants and the canvas shoes, and we're going to dress like Chinese coolies with all the women and brocade coats for evening. And it's going to be one big splash because there's a culture of thousands of years of China dishes and music and tastes and sounds, and they'll get out their Chinese cookware and the recipes, and all of a sudden the American children are going to find out that there's a culture way out there. Just like your Sundays had an article today on the Hopi Indian, and there's a culture of the American Indian we're going to discover too. And it isn't that one religion has a way. The Book of the Hopi goes into the Hope, you know, beautiful religion. I believe it as part of my religion. All of them can incorporate. So J. Edgar Hoover's left there. And he's hysterical, and he can't go back. But what about Jake? What's the alternative to J. Edgar Hoover? Well, you better watch out. Because when Richard Nixon and Mitchell have their mind on something, I worry. And my concern as a research analyst, political assassinations, and I consider myself an expert on the subject. I followed the rise of Nazis and butchers and Führers in the United States, and this team of Richard Nixon and Spiro Agnew and John Mitchell and John Connally and Ronald Reagan and Rockefeller and a group of men in Arizona and Jamaica and Miami and Texas and Los Angeles are working, and this is your last chance. This is the last chance in America. They'll push out J. Edgar Hoover and his agency. Whoever succeeds from him will be cut off from all the intelligence gathering. But you're going to have something different. We are on the brink, I feel. Right now, the newspaper is filled with information of candidates for the 72 elections, and it all is just covering over the real issues. We're on the brink of a 1971-72 Weimar Republic. We're at that point, versus a Monday in January 30th, 1933. And I'm going to read a quotation from The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. Hitler went to the Chancellery, and a few moments later, Goebbels and others witnessed the miracle. The man with a Charlie Chaplin mustache, who had been down-and-out tramp in Vienna in his youth, an unknown soldier of World War I, derelict in Munich in post-war days, somewhat comical leader of the beer hall, spellbinder, not even German but Austrian, 43 years old, was administered the oath as Chancellor of the German Reich. The Third Reich was referred to as the Thousand-Year Reich, and Hitler boasted it would endure for 1,000 years. I'm continuing the quotation from The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. It is remarkable how little those of us who were stationed in Germany during the Nazi time, journalists, diplomats, really knew what was going on behind the facade. A totalitarian dictatorship, by its very nature, works in secret. It works in great secrecy, and it knows how to preserve that secrecy from the prying eyes of outsiders. It was easy to describe Hitler's accession to power, but the fateful decisions secretly made, the intrigues, the treachery, the motives, the aberrations which led them to them, played by the principal actors behind the scene, the extent of the terror they exercised, and their technique for organizing it, that remained hidden until the secret German papers were turned up after the war. End quotes. Why do I refer to this now? Because in Washington, everything done is in secret. Richard Nixon is isolated from people. Wilbur Mills is not making a decision on the economy. Roy Ashe is making it, who's connected with the overthrow of Greece. The Pentagon Papers, they tried to stop everything. It was secret. Thousands of papers were taken down to Texas that are secret. Millions of papers. Lyndon Johnson comes out with a book. It's all, everything he doesn't want to put in there is secret. The information on the assassination of John Kennedy, 75 years to be locked up, secret. The cabinet, no longer needed, bypassed completely, secret. Mr. Rogers, our Secretary of State, doesn't go to China. Kissinger goes there. All secret. What is said is secret. How they got to power, what John Mitchell did before he got into his position is secret. Why he chooses a man like Mr. Rehnquist, who we don't know a thing about, will remain a secret until researchers go into it. Or his other choice, Mr. Powell, he simply had a law practice, or he was president of the local board of education. Everything else is secret. The researchers will have to go into who their clients were, who they represented, what political spectrum, what munitions factories. All the only way to stop this Reich that Hitler talked about that would last 1,000 years is to delve into these secrets. That's why I do my research in Game Back, the Newsday article. The man said, we're doing this investigation, this type of investigative reporting again, to find out who runs the country. And you people out there who listen, get books, get information that I talk about if you haven't read some of those now, and keep reading your newspapers. And every time you see something that says national security, it's a secret, make a fuss about it. Call people up, write to the congressman. Let's not have any secrets, because this is the way we're tying ourselves off. Now, we have an article to discuss on J. Edgar Hoover that was written up in the newspaper. It may be in tonight's Herald. I don't know. It was by William Buckley, and it was in yesterday's paper. But instead of carrying it, was in the San Jose Mercury. Yeah. But last night, Buckley didn't put it in the Herald. And it's about a committee investigating J. Edgar Hoover that held a meeting in Princeton. And this particular committee is for people who are victims of J. Edgar Hoover. Is that a turning point, Gloria? And, of course, William Buckley is putting it down, and he's making fun of all the people there who have been anti-Hoover people. But in terms of political assassinations, I think it's important for me to point out that the members of this committee who met at Woodrow Wilson School in Princeton last weekend are involved with John Kennedy. One of the members of this committee is going to be Leonard Bernstein, who works with the Panthers. Another one is Burke Marshall, the assistant attorney general during the Kennedy years. Burke Marshall is the man who holds the key to the National Archives that could be opened up. He holds the coat of John Kennedy's. Sure, with the bullet holes if they want. The committee is called Public Justice for Victims of J. Edgar Hoover. Fred Cook, the gentleman I mentioned who's on the committee to investigate assassinations, is on this particular committee. He claims that Alger Hiss was framed by Richard Nixon, and I met somebody who's done 6 years research on this subject who said new evidence is coming out on that too. And Martin Peretz from Harvard, a philanthropist. There's a lot of movie people that are going into this investigation, and that have been invited on the committee. And Marine Commandant General David Shoup, who has been talking about war crimes since the Vietnam thing. Now, it could be that they're going to set up a tribunal like we had after the war in Germany. A lot of people say, well, what are you going to do with all this research? What? Where can it go? Can you stop the elections in 72? What if you did? Or who's going to run that would change things differently? I would like to see a group of people set up like they're going to replace in China. Mao Zedong and has said that there will be 21-man committee. They're not going to have one-man rule the government anymore. And I would like to see, there's going to be a lot of trouble in this country, and I would like to see a sensible group of people moving in a direction with alternatives, which I've been thinking about in the event that what I am saying is true. Because out of Long Island is this exposure now that's going to come down on all of Richard Nixon's world, financially, socially, in every other way. There's an interesting article in the paper this week, two articles about Richard Nixon. One was about his housekeeper who was caught for burglary at a shopping center, and she had some dresses she had stolen, and the police covered it up nicely and said the woman was hypnotized, that somebody from the parking lot went up to her and sprayed something in her face and hypnotized her, and the judge there let her off of the charge and said, heaven help the president if this could happen to this woman. Now, I don't know whether they're just covering up because somebody in his immediate vicinity had stolen, but the very interesting thing was, this was about Tuesday that happened, and on Saturday or Sunday's paper, there was an article that Richard Nixon went to sleep. He went to Camp David over the weekend, and Tricia and her husband were down there, and he went to sleep, and they made an article that he went to sleep for 14 hours and didn't wake up. So maybe they're spraying Richard with the same spray, and they're setting the stage for something that's going to happen, that somebody close to him could really, this is very unusual that he sleeps as long, it made the newspaper. The other choice is that he didn't have Bebe Rebozo with him, maybe, and he had to go to bed. Because with all these scandals and with the things coming out about Bebe Rebozo, he's going to have to physically separate himself from this particular man. But what is happening when Bobby Kennedy's pal and investigator is bringing out these scandals of Richard Nixon and Bebe Rebozo in the Florida area and Smathers and defense industry and the mafia, and a group at Princeton University, now heavily financed, it names other people, Mrs. Marshall Field, Mrs. Eleanor Gimbel, and Charles Goodell, who used to, he was a senator from New York, and Mr. Buckley replaced him. He took his place. Oh, and Arthur Schlesinger is on the committee.
Oh.
Yeah, and there's a historian through the Kennedy period, and Jules Pfeiffer is on this committee to investigate the victims, and Ramsey Clark, the victims of J. Edgar Hoover, the list, I could read it, the people on it, Ramsey Clark, Miss Lillian Hellman, the playwright, Burke Marshall, the attorney for Ted Kennedy, Leonard Bernstein, the movie people are Warren Beatty, Paul Newman, Candice Bergman, and Shirley MacLaine. Now, those four names mean a lot to me, too, because that's the crowd that's friendly with Jane Fonda and Peter Fonda and Mark Lane, and he travels in Hollywood with those people, and Mark Lane, you all know that name in terms of assassination research. So this is something that may have a lot of political implications, this committee. I don't know yet how far-reaching it's going to be, whether it could exchange the whole power in the United States before the 72 election, whether it could bring people to trial. It just came out in the paper yesterday, and because of the people on the committee and knowing where their heads are at, and knowing how late it is in the game, something has to come of that, breaking with the Newsday story. Now, in the week that follows, we're going to have to sit and watch the appointments to the Supreme Court. John Mitchell is a man that people fear. A lot of people really fear him. I have quotations of different articles. I went down through my file, as I say, looking for what I could find about William Rehnquist and Mr. Powell to see if their names ring any bells. But in looking through those files, it always makes my hair stand on end, the decisions that John Mitchell makes. And we have to remember that William Rehnquist is a top official in the Justice Department and that he endorses those policies. And when you think of the Justice Department, I think of Richard Kleindienst, who's a deputy attorney general from Arizona, who said in Atlantic Magazine that people who demonstrated should be rounded up and be put in detention camps. And I think of Will Wilson, who was the second man under John Mitchell in the Justice Department until he stepped down last week because of his tax problems or his banking problems with his clients in Texas. And I'm doing research on that this week. I have all the articles, but I haven't concentrated on that the way I should. And that seems now to involve the mafia and underworld, too. This is why he stepped out, because those connections are being exposed. And Will Wilson said that student protesters should be put in the penitentiary. So when you think of John Mitchell's laws that he's put through so far, the no-knock law, entry without charges being made, and he speaks about he's afraid of permissiveness, and the position he's taken when the Panthers were shot down, and prison conditions, and his putting down the intellectuals and the radicals. When you think of John Mitchell, the image in my mind is like a Goering or a Himmler, and his men could be little Eichmann. So when I see what Will Wilson has said and Richard Klein has said, I am anxious to see what William Rehnquist, what they come up with, his frame of mind. If he supports the other possibilities, the team is getting tighter. And then Mr. Nixon has the control of three appointments plus the Chief Justice. And that's making the Supreme Court pretty heavy. Before we go up there, I want to make one correction in Mr. Smathers with the Air Force. It's the Air Transport Command that he was in as a civilian navigator. He was not in the I said Strategic Air Command. He was not a enlisted in the Army as such. He was a civilian navigator for the unit of the Air Transport Command, which took planes from Miami to Africa and the Gold Coast of Africa.
Well, maybe we can do another program on the possibilities for the Supreme Court. We didn't really, we just barely touched on them today.
Oh, yeah, there was one outrageous quotation. I wanted to say that John Mitchell met with a group of black members of Congress or officials, and they were having some confrontations. And John Mitchell said to the group, you'd be better informed if instead of listening to what I say, you watch what we do. End quote. John Mitchell said to these particular men. And this is what I'm trying to tell the people, Gloria, on the show. I read what these people say in the newspaper, and then I file, you know, where they go, where their trips are, who they're meeting, you know, what their connections are, because the total thing of what they do is what they are. And if you take these candidates for what they say, you're going to be in the same bind and end up with a funny little Hitler, maybe dressed up like Spiro Agnew. You know, this is the comical person that nobody would believe could really make it. But he can, you see. And so to repeat that again, John Mitchell said to this group, you'd be better informed if instead of listening to what I say, you watch what we do.
You suggest that we watch what they do.
Yes, yeah. Keep your eyes open and think of what I say, and I hope you gain something from it. Yeah.
Thank you, May, again.
Listening to Dialogue. Dialogue is a presentation of the Public Affairs and Special Events Department of KLRB News.
Thank you.